exalting I stand, and point to the print of the nails in his hand. Oh, sing of his mighty love, sing of his mighty love, sing of his mighty love, mighty to save.
Greetings, friends. This is J.C. Yoakum bringing you Hymn Time. We hope the hymns that we've chosen for today will be comforting and inspiring to each listener. The wonderful old hymn writers of the past each made a contribution to our Christian lives that cannot be measured or even estimated. Many times the words of a good hymn will fill a spiritual need that nothing else will. Such was a story connected with our first hymn today. After the efforts of a loving minister had failed, the words of a hymn touched a hard heart. We are speaking of the very old Jerusalem, my long-sought home. This hymn is found in a thin quarto numbered 15,225 in the British Museum and marked on the back Queen Elizabeth. It appeared in ballad form between 1650 and 1670. According to J.A. Picton, who made a study of the subject in 1875, it was probably about 1616. Different men have given their opinions about who the writer was, but none of them agreed. This is a very meager and unsatisfactory record of a very fine hymn. We do know, however, that it was translated from Latin in 1790, and through the years has been a favorite of many church-going people. An interesting story connected with our hymn is as follows. A young Scotchman on his deathbed in New Orleans was visited by a Presbyterian minister. For some time he was obdurate and repelled the advances of his kind friend. At last the good man turned away, and hardly realizing what he did, began to sing, "Jerusalem, my happy home." The hard heart was touched. "My mother used to sing that hymn," exclaimed the lad. Once more the song of the prisoner had brought comfort to the captive. Let's enjoy this fine old hymn, "Jerusalem, my long-sought home."
Thank you.
Joseph Hart was born in London in the year of 1712. His parents were pious people from whom he received an excellent education and a good start in life. He was, at first, a classical teacher and continued in this calling for many years. Though he had many serious thoughts during his early manhood, he stifled them all and even wrote a work entitled The Unreasonableness of Religion. This bears the date of 1741. He still felt qualms of conscience and in 1757 received impressions not to be shaken off while meditating upon Christ's suffering in the garden. At length, he was converted while listening to a sermon preached from Revelation 3:10. Joseph Hart spoke of his conversion on this wise: "The Lord, by his Spirit of love, came not in a visionary manner into my brain, but with such divine power and energy into my soul that I was lost in blissful amazement. I cried out, 'What, me, Lord?' His Spirit answered in me, 'Yes, thee.' The answer was, 'I pardon thee freely and fully.' The change I felt in my soul was as sudden and sweet as that experienced when a heavy burden is unexpectedly taken from one's shoulders. Jesus Christ and Him crucified is now the only thing that I desire to know." In 1759, Joseph Hart began in good earnest to preach and to write hymns. In 1762, he published the second edition of his hymn book. It contained 119 hymns with a supplement of 82 hymns and 7 doxologies. The 27th hymn is an autobiography, 2 stanzas of which go like thus: "I, who lately had been lost and feared a just and heavy doom, received a pardon for the past, a promise for the time to come. This promise oft I call to mind as though some painful paths I go, and secret consolation find and strength to fight with every foe." The words of this poem lead us to believe that all his life he felt the effects of his early dissipation. Also, the words of his brother-in-law, a Mr. Hughes, at Joseph Hart's funeral in May of 1768. In his funeral sermon, Mr. Hughes said, "He died with the yoke of Christ on his neck. Neither would he suffer it to be taken off, for you are his witnesses that he preached Christ to you with the arrows of death sticking in him." His funeral was attended by some 20,000 persons. The words of the following hymn attest to the belief that Joseph Hart lived very close to his God. The title is simply one word: prayer.
Once more we come before our God, once more His blessings ask. Oh, may not duty seem a woe, worship prove a task.
The title of our next hymn is, When Thou, My Righteous Judge, Shall Come. There is no conclusive proof of who the writer was, but some believe it to be the work of Lady Selina Shirley, better known as the Countess of Huntingdon. At any rate, it was a favorite hymn of hers. Lady Huntingdon was born August the 24th of 1707 of a noble family. In later years, she was known to thank God that it was written, not many mighty, not many noble are called, inasmuch as this still gave hope that some of them might be saved. When only 9 years old, she was seriously impressed at a funeral. Also, a dangerous illness had settled on her, purpose to serve God. These convictions, together with influences derived from the preaching of Whitefield and the Wesleys, determined her heart to seek after the Lord. She was married in June of 1728 to Theophilus, Earl of Huntingdon, who frequently accompanied her to worship services. She tried diligently to persuade others from her own station in society. This was a very difficult task, but to attend church with her. In fact, she did not escape the sneers and reproaches of secret enemies and false friends, who felt only distaste toward the humbleness of Christ's flock. Most of those who made up the congregation at Fetters Lane, where Lady Huntingdon went regularly to worship, were low and ill-born. The ridicule of others had a little effect on her ladyship, however, for she governed her life on the principles of Christian integrity, caring for the sick and the poor, and trying to help teach laborers and tenants a better way of life. Clergyman and hymn writer Philip Doddridge met with her kindness. When he was dying with tuberculosis, it was Lady Huntingdon's money that carried him to a milder climate and made his last days more comfortable. In addition to preparing a hymn book, she helped to establish 64 chapels before her death in 1791 at the age of 84. Very expressive of her devotion to God is a statement made by Lady Huntingdon not long before her death. Let me be found accepted in the Beloved and complete in Him. Listen to her favorite hymn now, as a chorus sings, When Thou, My Righteous Judge, Shall Come.
When Thou, My Righteous Judge, shall come to fetch thy ransom people home, to fetch thy ransom people home, shall I among them stand? Shall such a worthless worm as I, who sometimes am a prey to die, who sometimes am a prey to die, be found at thy right hand? I love to meet among them now, before thy gracious feet to bow, before thy gracious feet to bow, the vilest of them all. But can I bear the piercing thought, what if my name should be left out? What if my name should be left out, when thou for them shalt call? Let me among thy saints be found, whene'er the archangel's trump shall sound, whene'er the archangel's trump shall sound, to see thy smiling face. Then run among the crowd and sing, while bells resounding mansions ring, while bells resounding mansions ring, with shouts of sovereign grace.
Edward Perronaut was born at Shoreham, England, August the 2nd, 1721. His father was a clergyman in the Church of England, and Edward himself was brought up with no other thought than to become the same. However, he differed with the established church, and somewhere around 1750 threw himself into the Wesleys' work. Later on, he had serious disagreements with the Wesleys also, and at the time of his death in 1792 was minister of an independent dissenting congregation in Canterbury. He has been described as strong-willed, passionate, impulsive, full of fire and enthusiasm, yet always living near his divine master. During the time of his affiliation with the Wesleys, Edward Perronaut wrote hymns for them, but after their disagreement, his hymns were banned from the Wesleys' books. Mr. Perronaut, however, continued to write hymns under pen names and under no names at all. Today, we wish to consider Mr. Perronaut as the writer of the wonderful old hymn, All Hail the Power of Jesus' Name. We find recorded many stories that prove this hymn to have glorified God and to have blessed Christians through the years. One such story follows. A missionary to India by the name of E.P. Scott was confronted by a group of hostile natives who pointed spears at his heart. Expecting nothing but death, he drew out his violin, shut his eyes, and started to play and sing, All Hail the Power of Jesus' Name. When the song was finished, Mr. Scott opened his eyes to friendliness instead of hostility. The missionary told this story on a visit to America, after which he returned to live and die among the people to whom All Hail the Power of Jesus' Name had given him access. Credit must be given here to Oliver Holden, who composed the tune, Coronation, to which the hymn is so inseparably bound. Mr. Holden was a carpenter whose love of music carried him into the study and composition of religious music. He also established a store for the sale of music. Listen now as we hear the great old hymn sung, All Hail the Power of Jesus' Name. Wave after wave of applause, the curtain went down. A tall, beautiful actress walked off the stage of London's Richmond Theatre. That night in 1837, Sarah Adams made her last appearance as Lady Macbeth. When she was 5 years old, her mother had died of tuberculosis. Her sister, Eliza, was bedridden with the disease, and now she herself was breaking at the age of 32. Her days on the stage being over, Sarah Adams turned to writing lyric verse, dramatic poems, and hymns. She contributed articles to religious periodicals. For themes for her hymn poems, the former actress turned to the Bible. One day in 1840, while reading the book of Genesis, Sarah Adams pondered the story of Jacob at Bethel. Thus was born what has been called the greatest hymn ever written by a woman. The following year, with 13 other hymns from her pen, it was published for the first time. 7 years later, Sarah Adams died. On September the 19th, 1901, churches in every city in America opened their doors. People stopped on city streets. Farmers stopped at their plows. Workmen stopped their machines. Some stood in silent prayer for 5 minutes with respectful memory of the assassinated William McKinley. Others prayed aloud, still others sang, "Nearer, my God, to thee." Just before the president had died, he had said, "Nearer, my God, to thee, God's will be done." A well-remembered story about the hymn concerns a fateful Sunday night in April of 1912 and the sinking of the luxury liner Titanic. As the few lifeboats with their cargo of 600 pulled away, hope was lost for 1,500 helpless souls on the decks of the stricken ship. Some say it is tradition, but others say it is true, that band leader Wallace Hartley struck up "Nearer, my God, to thee," and that the singing of this hymn was hushed only by the freezing waves that closed over the sinking vessel. Few hymns have escaped alteration by critics and editors, but word for word, line for line, the verses of "Nearer, my God, to thee" remain just as the gifted woman wrote them. Added to such perfection, so appealing a tune as only Lowell Mason could compose, and little wonder that the result is a great hymn. Listen now as we hear "Nearer, my God, to thee."
Nearer, my God, to thee, nearer to thee. E'en though it be a cross that raiseth me,
You have been listening to Hymn Time. Your narrator has been J.C. Yoakum. This program is edited, compiled, and originates in Cuthbert, Georgia. We invite you to tune in again next week at the same time. Until then, may God be with you.